Hello, and welcome to Community Outreach. I'm Raquel Williams, and joining us today is Tom Gagliano. He is a best-selling author, a Jersey guy, a graduate of Seton Hall University with a bachelor's degree in marketing. Tom also has a master's degree in social work from Rutgers University. And today we are discussing his two books. The first book, The Problem Was Me. That's a book that has to do with addiction. And his latest book, Don't Put Crap in Your Kid's Diaper. I'm going to leave that right there. We'll talk about what that's about in a moment. Tom, thanks so much for joining us today.
Raquel, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
You know, 2019 is winding down. And it's at the end of the year that we all seem to reflect back on what we've done. Did we accomplish our goals? We reflect on mistakes that we made and how not to make those same mistakes going into the new year. And I know you have quite a story, and I'm going to let you go ahead and tell us about that. I know that you do work as a life coach, a motivational speaker, an author, among others. What brought you to the point where you are right now?
What brought me to the point that I'm at right now is life. There's no greater teacher than life. What happened to me really is what happens to many people out there. You know, I grew up in a tough childhood. I had an alcoholic dad that if he didn't come home at a certain time, it meant he was going to come home drunk. And I spent some nights just shivering at the top of the stairs, pulling him off my mom. Oh, so there was a lot of trauma in childhood. And why is that important? Well, what I've learned in school and in my own life is that children are egocentric. Okay, that means the world revolves around them at a very young age. So when my dad was doing this, unfortunately, my brain didn't develop enough to say, gee, my dad's got a drinking problem. Instead, I said, what's the matter with me? I must be defective or worthless, or my dad wouldn't be doing this. And this is what all children do. When their parents are not acting appropriately in any way, shape, or form, the child doesn't stop loving the parent. The child stops loving themselves.
Wow.
And that's really what I learned early on. And I learned that the early childhood messages that we learn release a tsunami of negative voices in our life, and they permeate our thinking. They're ingrained. And those childhood messages will dictate the intimacy we have or don't have, our parenting skills, careers we choose, even the roles that we play. You know, you were talking about the holidays. We're all going back to the holidays. Yeah. Well, we're going to go back to the roles we were playing, set up to play in childhood. Who's going to go back? How many of your listeners are going to go back to playing that people-pleaser role where they can't say no to anyone? Or the perfectionist role where they only see what they've done wrong. They don't celebrate their victories. All these roles are set up early on in childhood. And for me, what happened is I became a very angry kid. I was in a lot of fights, I was in a lot of trouble. And really, I wanted the world to pay the bill for what happened to me as a kid. I became victimized, in my head at least. And I had to fix what was broken inside of me, or I was going to lead a very lonely life. And as it turned out, as I got older, got married, my wife and children left me. Understandably so. I was an addict, and I was doing things I shouldn't be doing, as my father did. He was a compulsive gambler, an alcoholic, a womanizer. My mom was a kid herself when I was born. And basically, I grew up with a lot of messages of told me I wasn't important, and I went to addiction to fill that void.
In addiction, in terms of what? What were you fighting with?
Well, I was fighting first with workaholism. And then I was fighting with gambling. I was making a fortune in business, but gambling away too. And then I went to womanizing. And it was addiction because I couldn't stop. I saw it was hurting those around me, but I couldn't stop. And then I decided, well, you know what, Tom, it's time to get help. It's time to let others in. And the problem with addiction is the addict believes they're in control of their addiction. Unfortunately, the addiction's in control of them, and they don't know that. It's a disease that says you don't have a disease.
And I know you get into that in your book, The Problem Was Me.
Yeah.
You came from a business background, and you decided to kind of venture into mental health. Your background and your story, is that why you chose to do that?
Yeah, I had, as you said, a business background. I started to get into a lot of therapy, went to 12-step meetings. And then it got to the point where I was pretty secure financially. I had stopped my addictions long ago. And I had two goals, Raquel. One goal was to help other people that suffered as I had from negative childhood messages. And the other goal was to give my children what I never had as a kid, a safe place, a place where they can, you know, be happy and not feel that they weren't worthy. And those were the two goals that that I had when I left the world of business. I started groups in my home for free for mm-hmm. those that suffered. And then some people said to me, hey, why don't you write a book? And they pushed me really to write a book. And mm-hmm. I met a Dr. Abraham Twersky, very renowned author in the Jewish world. Mm-hmm. And he read my manuscript and said, we got to get this out. He says, not only for people, but therapists need to hear this, need to really hear the underlying reason why people go to addiction.
Okay.
And my book is about my life story and the story of other men and women that I've helped.
All right. So let's get right into the problem was being me. And in the book, you talk about something called the warden. I don't know if that is that a person or a thing. What exactly is the warden in that
book? The warden is a fictitious character mm-hmm. that kind of sits on your shoulder. Now, when you come from a childhood that I came from, where you never really saw mom and dad respecting each other, your version of intimacy wasn't warmth and love. Mm-hmm. It was fear and pain. Well, you develop this kind of fictitious character that warns you, don't let anyone close. You're only going to get hurt. And this warden is this intrusive voice that I talk about in the book. Mm-hmm. This voice that really commands us to play the roles that we play. Like I said, not just the addictive role, but the people pleaser role, the perfectionist role. It's we're almost imprisoned to play this role that this warden's voice early in childhood sets us out to play.
Okay.
And it's a very powerful voice. And it's really only through a fellowship. And that fellowship doesn't have to be a 12-step fellowship. It could be a support group. It's really witnesses, witnesses that know our truth. Those are the people that could silence the warden's voice so we can take our life to a new level. So we uncuff ourselves and lead the life we want to lead, not the life we're controlled to lead by this fictitious character.
Okay. And this fictitious character, the warden, negative thoughts. For the most part, yes?
All negative thoughts.
All negative.
You're not going to achieve in life, so why even try?
Mm.
I've had clients come to me that are brilliant but can't move in business or in the world of business because that warden tells them, why try? You're not going to make it. And they listen to the warden.
Hmm.
See, that's the problem. It's a very powerful voice. I've had clients that sabotage the intimacy in their life constantly. Whenever anybody comes close, they end up cheating on them or doing something, and they look to the world like they're very bad people.
Mm-hmm.
But what they are is they're very scared people, and they're afraid that if they let somebody really see who they are inside, that they're just going to abandon and run away from them just the way their parents did.
Wow.
So, and I'm not excusing any of this behavior by no means. I'm really trying to talk about the three essentials in my book that I think people need in order to heal themselves. And first is self-awareness.
Self-awareness.
I need to know what's broken inside of me in order to know what I have to fix. You know, if I'm working on my foot and it's my shoulder that's the problem, I ain't going anywhere.
Right.
So self-awareness is the first key. The second key is from awareness, it teaches me what actions I need to take, what positive actions I need to take in order to enhance my life. And the third piece is consistency.
Okay.
Maintenance. If I consistently take those actions, and even when I don't want to, okay, because we don't always want to do what's healthy. Sometimes
yeah,
we're comfortable
yeah.
doing things that aren't healthy, like being isolated. We may be comfortable in isolation, yet mm-hmm. isolation is not healthy for many of us that come from intrusive voices in childhood.
Okay.
So if I can consistently take these actions with the help of others. Now, this is where it becomes a we process, not a me process. I may not be strong enough to consistently take these actions unless I make myself available and accountable to a support group that can help me move forward.
Never thought of it that way. So sometimes you do actually need help from others to get you through these to get you through to the point where you have consistency and you're taking positive steps.
Well, one adage I go by is if I'm talking to only myself, I might be talking to the wrong person.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. And it's a truism because if I'm talking to the warden, there's a lot of things I'll be doing that may be sabotaging my life and I may not even know it. And I tell my clients, you know, one of the things to do is to take an inventory and look at the fears that stop you and talk to people to find people that know you, people you trust, people that are going to be non-judgmental now, not
right.
people that are going to tell you what you're doing wrong all the time,
right.
people that you know got your back. and talk about your fears, because I believe probably 80 to 90% of our fears are imagined. They're not real, but we will make them real. And there's a little, another little saying, fear is false evidence appearing real sometimes.
Okay.
And we can turn around and we can let false fear rule out decisions.
Wow.
I'm going to stay stuck then.
Wow. You know, this is interesting. We all have negative thoughts from time to time,
sure.
Right? I mean, you can't avoid it. Negative thoughts creep in.
Mm-hmm.
But when is it a problem that you really need to, you know, seek help and talk to someone? When does it become, you know, debilitating?
When it makes your life unmanageable. If we have negative thoughts and we're finding that we're having relationship problems, if we're letting those thoughts guide our actions, it's time to get help professionally, or it could be a rabbi, a bishop, anyone that you could put your stuff out there to that can help process your blind spots and some of the areas in your life that may not be real again. So again, that's why I always believe in fellowship. And that's why I believe that people could do for you what you can't do for yourself.
Okay. Wow. This is great. You know, I never really thought of it that way when you said sometimes, you know, you're talking to yourself, you could be talking to the wrong person. But that makes so much sense, especially when it comes to self-sabotage.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And especially, again, when you come from those childhood messages that you were given the message that you weren't good enough or you weren't worthy, that's where that warden's voice is going to really get loud. And it's going to be hard to tune it out.
That warden doesn't want you to be happy, doesn't think you should be happy.
Well,
you start to believe it after a while.
Sure. Well, again, you know, we go back to egocentricity of children. And if my parents, if I feel I don't matter to my parents, then who do I matter to in childhood?
Right.
And everything is going to come from that, is going to stem from that. Core beliefs, unfortunately, are not formed in your teens, 20s, 30s, 40s, or 50s. They're formed early on. And it's what you believe your value is in life. And they come from, if your parents don't show you that you matter in actions, and that's what we'll get into my second book. If
right.
they don't show you that you matter, you don't feel like you matter. And that's where the self-sabotage will come in a lot of different areas.
Okay. Yeah, we'll definitely get into that in the second book.
Sure.
I wanted to bring something else into the picture here for a moment, because I know a lot of people struggle with this, and this might even play more into the self-sabotage, and that's social media. That's could be a new method of self-sabotage, as we all
Absolutely.
Compare ourselves to others who are, you know, off to Belize or doing whatever. You know, everyone posts all the good stuff. No one really posts any struggles that they're really facing. And then you kind of just sit and compare yourself, and you might feel like, well, gee, my life isn't really worth as much as that other life.
You make a great point. You know, as much as social media has made it a smaller world and we learn so much more than we wouldn't have learned, social media also creates a better than and less than environment.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it tells you you need to wear this certain clothes, be a certain shape, be a certain height, certain eyes,
right.
And you start to get the impression that I'm not good enough. I have so many clients that are sending me their kids because of depression, anxiety, suicide. All these rates are up tremendously. And I really believe that a lot of this is connected to social media. Social media makes us talk to other people less. Instead, we're texting and we're emailing and we're not learning how to have personal conversations. We're not learning how to handle difficulties. We're ghosting. We're running away instead of learning how to talk out our problems. So there's a lot of things that social media has hurt us. And there's something called Snapchat dysmorphia. I don't know if you ever heard of it. But
I think I have. Snapchat having to do with what, your appearance, or you look at yourself a certain way, or is it the filters?
Well,
is that
plastic
exactly?
Surgeons are saying more and more teenagers are coming to them for plastic surgery just to improve their selfies.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, this is scary,
oh my
to
goodness.
Say the least. And then kids are not learning how to have intimate emotional relationships. They're
That's
just
right.
not learning.
Yeah.
They're not learning. They're learning how to get out of things, ghost, not how to regulate their discomfort. Look, I don't know how many of your listeners have a perfect life, but I don't think too many of them do.
I don't think any of them
no.
do. Yeah.
So we all have to learn how to regulate our discomfort in healthy ways. And the media does not teach us that. It teaches us to run away, shut down, act out with addiction, and we can go on and on and on.
Wow. So we probably should all go on a social media diet, and probably kids don't really belong on social media. I mean, hold that off as long as you can, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. You're listening to Community Outreach. I'm Raquel Williams, and we are joined by Tom Gagliano. He is a best-selling author, a graduate of Seton Hall University. He's got a bachelor's degree in marketing. He also has a master's degree in social work from Rutgers University, so he's a Jersey guy. And we're discussing his two books. We were just discussing the first book, The Problem Was Me, and that's a book about addiction. And now we're going to get into, and you know, the two books really relate to each other, mm-hmm. So we'll talk about that. The latest book is Don't Put Crap in Your Kid's Diaper. That's a pretty, pretty hilarious title. But it makes sense when you talk about what you're talking about with the book. What exactly do you mean by don't put crap in your kid's diaper?
Yeah, just one correction I sent you. It's don't put your crap in your
don't
kid's diaper.
Don't put your crap.
Yes,
okay,
yes.
Let's do that. Don't put your crap.
In
Got
your
it.
Kid's diaper. Well, you know, again, it goes by a lot of what I've learned through my experiences and what I learned in schooling. And it's not a book meant to bash parents. I want to say that first and foremost.
Okay.
It really isn't. It's a book that'll help parents explore what messages they're giving their children that are healthy and what messages may need a little tweaking or a little attention, let's say. You know, our kids are born. And most of us love our kids deeply, mm-hmm. and sometimes we overprotect them. Sometimes we put our fears in their diaper, our expectations in their diaper. It happens all the time. And what my book does, it gives us a little more awareness about how I'm showing up with my children. Maybe I'm not showing up as healthy as I think I am. And I want to hold, like I said, I want to hold on to these messages. I mean, these were good ones, mm-hmm. but let's take a peek at some of the ones that, that I need to challenge. One of the things I tell parents all the time is, our goal is not to control our kids' behavior. Our goal is to teach our kids how to control their own behavior.
Okay.
Why? Because when our kids get to a certain age, they're not going to do what we tell them to do.
True.
They're going to do what they want to do. Now, if they have healthy values, healthy beliefs, they're going to control their own behavior to do healthy actions, healthy self-esteem. But if we think that we're going to twist their arm their whole life to get them to do what we want them to do, guess what's going to happen when they get old enough and they get their license? They're just going to do what they want to do.
That's true. I mean, look at our own childhoods, right? We should realize that it doesn't matter how much your parents are drumming into you, do this, do that. You pretty much have your own decisions on what you'd like to do.
Right. And if we develop a healthy child with good self-esteem and value, they're going to want to do healthy things, not have to do healthy things because their parents tell them to do it. There is a difference. And that's why a lot of times I tell parents, you know, let your children get out of their own messes. Now, if they're in pending danger,
that's
you have
different.
To be there.
Right.
And parent, don't get me wrong, but it's good that our children learn coping mechanisms early on because okay. eventually they're going to face the world without mommy and daddy, and they need to have those coping skills in place so they can regulate, as we spoke earlier about their discomfort, resolve their discomfort. So when we're always rushing in and fixing them or taking care of their problems, we're really not getting ready to face the world when that day comes. And you know, the funny thing is the children get more mad at the parent that was controlling their behavior when they get older. And then the parent turns and says, hey, Tom, I don't understand this. I was always there and I was always there. Yeah, you were. And they're not ready to face the world and they're angry inside. And they're angry at the parent that always got, you know, took care of everything and didn't let them get out of their own messes.
Okay.
So to be clear, when they're in impending danger, don't get me wrong, we have to be there. But we also have to teach them and allow them to get out of their own messes at times, develop coping mechanisms early on.
Now, that means mom, dad, caregiver, whoever, need to also know how to get out of their own messes and have coping mechanisms. What if mom and dad aren't coping well?
Well, you know what? Well, now we go back to the first book. The problem was me. We can't give our children what we don't have. Mm-hmm. So if we're not working on our shortcomings, you know, you brought up social media. If all we do is text and email all day and we're not spending time with our children, it's hard to tell our children, hey, get off the texting all day
right.
if we're doing it. So we do have to model healthy behavior, which means we have to take our own inventory, work on what we need to work on to show our children that it takes courage to work on ourselves.
Right.
But that courage has to be shown in action, not in words.
Okay. Okay. Now, kids don't come with instruction books. We they're born, they're here, and pretty much, you know, we're just trying to keep them alive and healthy, and we do the best that we can. But it's interesting when you talk to other parents. Other parents are facing the same struggles, the same issues. And I guess there's no wrong way to parent. But when you're talking about coping skills and the fact that the kids, they're just sponges, especially at a very young age, they're seeing everything that we're doing and they tend to just emulate it. So there's a cycle.
Yeah, they're market researchers is what they are. So there's some things that we can do. Right? Number one, we need to validate and acknowledge their feelings. A child that feels like their feelings don't matter, they'll feel like they don't matter.
Okay.
And I go back to my first book. I never had a parent that said, "Hey, Tom, you look sad. How you doing? You had a tough day? You want to talk about it?" We have to open up a curious communication with our children. Hey, what sites were you on a computer? Let's talk about it.
Not just how was school.
No.
Right.
No. You don't have to give quantity time, but you can give quality time. Check in with your kids. Be curious. How they doing? You look sad. You want to talk about it? What's going on? And then when they tell you their feelings, don't say you shouldn't feel that way or direct their feelings.
Right.
Validate. I'm sorry to hear. I see you sad. Acknowledge and validate their feelings so that they feel valued themselves.
Okay.
So acknowledge and validate their feelings, and then also be curious with your children. Like I said, here's another thing that it's important for parents. When we see a kid hurting, maybe they're hurting because they got their heart broke, or maybe they made an error in a ball game or missed a shot or failed a test they studied for.
Mm-hmm.
Let compassion guide what you say and the way you say it. And here's what I mean by that. Think about for a minute before you rush in and talk to your kid. Think about what you would have wanted to hear from your parents at that age. Let compassion guide a little bit of what you say.
Right.
Do I go in and fix it? You know, my son gave me a great example of this in a Little League game. He was pitching on a team and he didn't pitch well at all. And I went to him in the dugout after the game and I'm saying to myself, what should I do with my son? Maybe I should like play therapist and say, hey, how you feeling? Or maybe play pitching coach and say, hey, you want me to help you with your follow through, your wind up?
Right.
I got to the dugout and he looked at me and he said, Dad, I need a hug.
Huh.
That's all he needed. He didn't need a pitching coach or a therapist. He told me what he needed. He needed a hug. And the funny thing was I'm hugging him in the dugout and all the other kids on his team, they're looking at this like,
what are you doing? What's happening?
How many of them needed a hug?
Right.
So when we see our children struggling, don't rush in and tell them what to do, fix their problem. Stop and say, what would I need? And you know, most of the time, when we're really hurting, we just need love. We need that hug.
Right.
And these are some of the things in my book I try to help parents see through. Because when we're in that emotional state, our head goes to certain things and we don't stop, reflect, pause, and take care of this. Same thing when our children do something wrong. I was a yeller right away, screaming and yelling. And I learned to pause, to stop, and talk to my children about choices. If you choose that, you choose this consequence.
Right.
If you choose not to come in when you're supposed to, you choose not to go out the next day.
Right.
It's your choice. Instead of yelling and screaming, we don't want our children to think that if they make mistakes in life, they are a mistake.
True, true.
Not to identify themselves. Or if they fail at things, they're not a failure. See that warden? The warden, whenever somebody comes from a tough childhood, whenever you make a mistake, the warden doesn't say, hey, it's okay, we all make mistakes. The warden says you are a mistake. Why should you even try again?
Wow.
So this is the messages early on that are so important. Not to get angry. Just give your kids choices. And if they make the wrong choices. You know, my son came to me in eighth grade and he said, Dad, he says, my friends smoke pot, marijuana, okay. Whatever, the weed, whatever they call it.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I'm really curious. I want to try it now.
I think it's awesome that he even came to you and said that.
That's because I set up a safe place for him.
Okay.
Like parents have to, you have to set up a safe environment where your children can talk to you about sex, pot, mm-hmm. anything, mm-hmm. and acknowledge their feelings first. Now, I'm a parent, right?
Right.
So he comes and says, I want to try pot. You know what I want to tell him?
Inside go screaming.
Go in your room until you're 25 and then come back out again. When you're 25, right. I'll open the door.
Right.
But of course, I didn't say that. So I said, what do you know about pot? What do you know? Let's find out. I said, you do know that it's illegal. Mm-hmm. And if you do something illegal, you chose to get in big trouble. Your choice.
Right.
So we spoke about these things. We spoke about consequences. We spoke about all these things. And he knows I'm a recovering addict. Well, my book is out there.
Right.
We spoke about addiction and how addiction can lead from one thing to the other. And you can, a lot of addicts end up in the cemetery thinking that I was in control of my addiction. I spoke to him about a lot of things. And he said to me, you know, Dad, I didn't even ask him for an answer because I didn't want him to think that my discussion was predicated on him doing what I wanted him to do, even though I did. And he says, you know, Dad, I'm not interested. See, this is what I mean when I say we want our children to make the choice, me to make the choice for him.
Right. Just show them what their choices would happen as a result of whatever choice they make.
Right. Right. Now, as a dad, of course, I wanted him to make my choice.
Right.
But I wanted him to make that choice on his own more than me telling him, if you do that, you're in your room and blah, 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 and this and that.
Right.
Because that is what I want to develop in my children, to make healthy choices on their
own. Since mom and dad are not going to be here forever, they have to learn how to do that on their
own.
Wow. I wanted to talk to you about that. You know, I was thinking about the warden. It seems like, hence the title of your book, Don't Put Your Crap in Your Kid's Diaper. It seems like we tend to pass our warden on to the kid, and now they have our warden. And
absolutely.
Then the cycle continues. And I know in some cases, in some upbringings, you know, that could be pretty tragic. There's some abuse, and that's how we have abuse. It just keeps going on and on and on, and it's passed on. How do we break that cycle? I guess this is part of breaking the cycle.
This is part of it. I'll give you another little quick story about how I did it. Now, I told you about my dad, and I saw my dad in the hospital when he was dying of cancer, and we rectified a lot of what was going on. Well, there was another situation that came up with my son. And we had our dog pass away. My son was very close to this dog. And I remember walking into his bedroom. He was about 12, and the dog was about 12 when he died. And my son was very sad. He was very heartbroken. And I remember walking over to him, and I said, are you okay? He said, yeah, Dad. And I wanted to walk out after that because he said he's okay. And as a recovering addict, I got to learn to deal with uncomfortable feelings in a healthy way. But I didn't. This was early in recovery. I walked over to him and I put his arms around my chest and his head on my shoulder. And he started to cry. And he started to cry uncontrollably. Mm. There's where I changed the messages that I received. See, I was giving my son a safe place.
Right.
A place to cry in his father's arms. I never had that as a kid.
Mm.
But I was creating that safe place for my son. And he knows and knew at that point, that's where I realized to make those changes in the messages handed to me, that my children can talk to me about anything. And I'm not going to judge them, make them feel like they are a mistake or put them down, but I'm going to create that safe place. So that's an example I can give you of how I've changed the messages that were handed to me.
Tremendous. Awesome examples, awesome tools that all parents can use and think it's very important. Again, the names of the two books, I wish we could sit and talk longer, Tom. The names of the two books, The Problem Was Me and the latest book, Don't Put Your Crap in Your Kid's Diaper. Where can we get it? Amazon, of course. And what's your website so people can go and check it out?
Well, you could go to my website is theproblemwasme.com. And I have a ton of podcasts out there. Wherever you listen to podcasts, if you put in the search bar, The Problem Was Me, I have podcasts, 25 different 20-minute podcasts. So the book you can get at Amazon.com or on my website. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Thank you so much, Tom. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Did you know the Wright brothers didn't actually invent the airplane?
Did you know the airplane was invented so a steamy affair would be more convenient?
Well, if you're curious like us and you like to laugh, find out how everyday things were invented with the Mockmade podcast.
An improvised comedy twist on how things were made, and we have some popular comics stopping by season one.
Find Mockmade and subscribe with your podcast app or at bpodstudios.com.
Or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
And remember, it wasn't made unless it's been Mockmade.